Where were you, what is your name, sir?
My name is Joe McElko.
And where were you born?
I was born in Mikado, Saskatchewan, on January 4th, 1919. I lived there for all my life. Went to school, and then worked on a farm. Rode the freight for a while when there was nothing else to do. In 1940, I joined the Saskatoon Light Infantry. Went to Saskatoon for a while, then was sent home. In 41, went back. Took my basic in Regina. Then went back to Dundurn to train as machine gunners. Finished their course, and then there was an application. Poster came out on a bulletin board. They wanted volunteers. So there's a whole platoon of us signed up.
What was the date?
That was sometime in the middle of September of 41. Then we all got, well, a week or so later, we didn't know where we were going. They just sent us home for 24 hours, we went to go and we came back. And got out of the car and went to Regina. That's where we joined up with the Grenadiers. And went down to Vancouver and sailed for Hong Kong.
So you never got to go to Jamaica to follow?
No. I was not in one of the original ones.
And what was your boat trip like to Hong Kong?
Well, it wasn't bad. It was one of the best boats. It was the Awatea, an Australian boat. And I guess the worst I hate the boat was the salt pork price that they had on the boat. Otherwise, it was pretty fair. But that was about the only complaint I had was the salt pork. It wasn't too salty to suit me.
And what about your stop off in Honolulu?
Well, it wasn't much of a stop off. Because, sure, they had a few of these girls with dress skirts dancing around, but I know it was 24 hours, not even 24 hours. We just stopped in for a little while and pulled out again, so it wasn't much of a stop off.
No real impressions of Hawaii?
No. We didn't have no time to go out and really see the sights. I mean, you put it up there for a week or so, then you could get on the boat and go and see something. This way we were pretty well quarantined in the boat because we were going in the family. Unless somebody sneaked off, which was possible. Otherwise, the trip was pretty nice. Something different, in a way, something I've never saw before.
What time did you arrive in Hong Kong?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, it must have been sometimes in the afternoon when we got in Hong Kong.
In the day?
No, that's October the 30th, the 31st, something like that. Or November the 30th. We could have been November. No, it must have been October, because we were only there 6 weeks, I believe, before the war broke. So it must have been end of October. Was last October we got in Hong Kong.
What were your impressions of Hong Kong?
Well, it was something I'd never seen. It looked sort of funny. You want to go any place, so you sit down and get a boy in a rickshaw pull and you want to get together. Money was no worry because for every dollar that we had, that was worth 370 in Hong Kong, and everything was cheap. Everything was really cheap. We could have got ourselves a quarter of beer for 20 cents their money. So money was no object as far as that goes. You know, that's when you get a dollar and you go in there and you got not $1 but 370 to spend and everything is cheap. So it was nice in there. The country was nice. I really liked the country.
What was your garrison duty like?
Garrison duty is pretty well like everything else, you know. You're out on parade, and then you go out and stand guard, out parade. We came there, we were there for about a week. We went up onto the island. It was by the, what they call a permanent cemetery. And we were there for a week. So just stand guard duty. Not much to guard, but that was the job to stand guard. We came back. Then we went back again. And we were up in the hills when the war broke out. We were up in the same place when the war broke out.
Did you have any leave or furlough before the war broke out in Hong Kong?
No. We were there only for a few weeks. We were there for about, I guess, a week quarantined or so before they would let us go any place. And then there was no place to go, there was no leave yet. We weren't long enough to
end. Was there any feeling there that war was imminent to the people?
No, it didn't seem like it. Nobody ever thought of anything ever happening like that. There was absolutely nothing going on. Although later, after we were prisoners, we had found out that when our boats were being unloaded, they had some Japanese spies in there, as coolies who were unloading the boat. We also had some of them running to the barracks selling watches or shaving the guys. They're actually Japanese, not Chinese. But they're supposed to get up on the crew, they were on their coolies, well, you just can't tell the difference. I didn't know the difference anyway.
Did you get to associate with troops from any other countries before?
No, not very well. I mean, we've met some British troops in there. But we mostly met them when we would go up in the evening to the pub or go down to the YMCA, you know, where we'd meet the British troops. But otherwise, we didn't.
The day war broke out, what was your personal experience on that day?
Well, to tell the truth, we were up in the house on garrison duty at this, what they call a permanent cemetery. And they said war broke out, well, we heard shells and a few bombs and planes flying. Actually, they thought it was just a joke. Somebody tried to pull a fast one. And then after we started to happen to be more shelling and more planes coming over and they ended up in the bombs, well, then we knew it was no joke. But from the start, we thought it was just somebody tried to, maybe some planes flying over, just target flights or something, and they tried to pull a fast one. But then we found out it wasn't, especially the Indians come with the cannons, we knew it was no, because they had Indian troops, these 6-pounders, you pull 9 trucks, you know. We knew it wasn't no more fun.
What was your portion of the battle?
Well, we were, like I said, on this, on guard duty there. Then, about a couple days after war broke out, A Company guys come through that they had been in the fight already. And they said it looked pretty bad, and they kept on going. So we stayed a few more days, and then we were called up to go, well, I don't know how far it was, to Wang Chai Gap. And we left in the evening of that day. We got there. Or in the afternoon, we got there in the evening, we had a bit to eat, and we had to go about another 3 miles. They said there was a police station at the thing. So that's where we took off for that police station. Well, we come, the road up there, pretty around the mountain's curved, you know, in the corner. So we come around one corner, there was a motorcycle guy come along, and Major, I believe it was, the commander was. He asked him, he said it was clear as far. He said there was a few Japanese around the police station, but there was nothing. So we looked about a couple hundred yards around the corner, and that's where the Japs were. They opened fire there.
This is on the mainland?
That's the island. We were on the island, yep. We went back, we pulled back a bit, stayed there till morning. And in the morning, well, some of the boys had already been hurt. And in the morning, as we had the machine guns, that's where Lieutenant Young, Rusty Young, he got it. Our Sergeant Major was right there, he got it too. And we were told to pull back. So we pulled back to the gap. And then we were carrying ammunition up to some place, replacing some guys. They come down tired after a few days, so a bunch of us would go up, take their positions, and there was all kinds of skirmishes, this and that, going on. That was up in the hills. So that time we had to pack mortar bombs for the mortar crews, because we had no other means of doing it except by...
You had no artillery support?
No, we had artillery support. It was Pat Corneal. Few mortars going, but the only way they could keep going was the boys had to carry the ammunition. And the mortar was uphill, and he had to go about a mile or two So they kept as long as they could, but it was pretty grim. Ammunition was pretty low. There wasn't too much ammunition. Outside of what we had brought, and they had some there that was really old stuff, must have been stuck from 1918 yet, the British had. Because there were some crates that were opened and they were just green molded together in our shells. So it wasn't much use. But otherwise, and then we hung on around there. And one day we came into this, we called back. We never did get to Wang Shai yet. That's where the brigadier was killed. But we tried coming to one place we're gonna go. We called us in, we're supposed to go out. And Lieutenant Colonel Sutcliffe, he come along and he said it was all over the base, surrendered, capitulated.
How was your food and water during your fighting?
It was very poor. It was very poor. There was actually no chance to get it. On the day that Ireland capitulated for dinner, that was Christmas Day, I believe, 41, they had a big Dixie of burnt beans. That's what we were eating. That was our breakfast and dinner all in one.
What was the morale of the men at this time?
It was good. I mean, nobody ever thought it was that things would turn out the way they were. Sure, there were a few setbacks, but nobody ever thought that there wasn't something on the way that would have pushed the things right back to normal again. The men were ready to go at all times, but nobody ever thought that it was that bad that we were just left there and abandoned. That's all. There was no help of any kind on the way, because nobody ever thought of that.
In the area you were fighting, the Japanese, did they outnumber you tremendously?
Pretty well, less.
And did they practice mass attacks?
Well, that's what it pretty well was. When they come through, it was always a mass attack, and there was just no way of stopping them. We were not prepared for that thing.
Did you find the men, you were just not experienced enough?
Well, there was maybe some of the world we weren't experienced, but none of us were experienced that thing. But as far as the men were concerned, I think every man was right in there, and there was none of this backing out to say, well, I'm going to let the other guy do it. Even though the men were not experienced. Sure, we were all scared. Admitted, we were there, and there was nobody was running away from it. Well, we were in this place, there was a few incendiary bombs dropped, we put the fires out, then Colonel Sutcliffe came along and said the island capitulated. We just hung around there and waited for the orders. Then a few Japanese officers come along, and I believe that day, must have been the Thursday day, they had us marching down, and I believe we ended up at North Point. It was a, we call it North Point Barracks. I don't think it was barracks, it was built for East, for Chinese, it was built something barracks. And that's where we were.
What about your weapons? Did you give them up?
Well, a few of us went and grabbed the barrel around the steel post of a bridge and threw them down the ravine. Some they just piled them up. And then what happened, I don't know, but a few of us went and grabbed those around the steel post and threw them down the ravine.
That's what you did?
That's what mine, yep. I got hell for it, though. Corporal says, quit throwing that, what are you going to tell the Japanese come along, what are you going to show them? I says, well, tell them I lost them. But nobody asked for us. And that's when we went, we marched out to North Point. It was quite a walk. No rations, pretty well, no water. Anybody had a water bottle, might have a bit of water, but it was until we got to North Point. And it was pretty tough for a while. The rations weren't as good as they should have been. But I guess there wasn't anything. So we just had to do what we could. Some of the boys did. before, well, somebody always had something in his kit bag. A couple cans of soup or some milk or something, so for a while, the first week it wasn't too bad because you only have something besides the rice. After that you're getting a tumble of rice in the morning at night.
You were in prison at North Point?
At North Point for a while.
How long was it?
I don't know how long, but that's where we marched first to North Point.
And what was the prisoner camp like?
Well, it was just taken very similar to barracks. Just long huts with beds on each side and an alley in between. Very similar to a barracks. And then from there we were taken down to Shemshpo. That was on the mainland, Kowloon district. It wasn't very much better there. There wasn't much variety of food. Except I remember one time they brought a bunch of pigs, you know. I don't know how many there was, but there was a tremendous amount of men there, and they're cooking rice in 45-gallon drums. That's what they're cooking the rice in. So they just cut them up and threw them, boiled everything together, and made it sort of a hash, and then everybody had some. Otherwise, there wasn't enough to the wagon, you know, everything, you know, just a couple.
And what did the men do at Shemshpo?
So we hung around for a while, and then, must have been in 42. When they had us going off and working on the airport, Kaitak Airport. We built the airport there. Because we had just a little wee, for little wee planes. They had us working there. There was a big hill there, they had to move that hill. That's when times were tough. Because too many guys had beriberi already. Feet would swell up. But that didn't make no difference. There were so many men out there who didn't tell the story, whether your feet were swollen or anything, you had to go unless you couldn't get out of bed. Then the guy was sick, if it was possible to move, he had to go.
He had to go from Shemshpo to?
Shemshpo, yes. They took us on a ferry and took us around to the Kaitak Airport. They did that, moved the hill, and then we had to cement the runway to pick the airport.
And how long a day did you put in?
Well, I don't know. It must have been over 10 hours after, so I couldn't tell.
And you yourself, what was your health like at that time?
Well, when we were working on the Kaitak Airport, I had very, very bad. My feet were very swollen up. But it was just one of those, and I felt a little better than the others. I used to go. One thing is, welcome back at night was most of the time the feet were dragging, they were dragging back, they were ached very bad. But there was guys who were worse off. Myself, I guess I was still pretty lucky that my feet were swollen, they ached. But otherwise, I felt pretty good.
And did you get any extra rations for working on
that? No, there was no extra rations for that. Nothing different. No rations, no shoes, no nothing. Any old clothes you had, you put them on your feet and you wear them. There was nothing extra for that.
What did the men do for clothing to get new clothing?
Well, there was very little new clothing. The weather was good there and most of the guys just wore G-strings. So as far as clothing was concerned, there was very little clothing worn. If you had something, well, it just hung around itself. So we couldn't, as far as clothing concerns, say it through them. I don't know where issued clothing there. We might have been issued clothing there, but I don't remember.
And were there any particular guards that you remember?
Well, I never ran into any in Hong Kong, but I did see we were quarantined for the stereo, and there was a bunch of us who were supposed to have the so-called carriers. In a place, they had these lined up, pretty much Indian troops. This officer, we asked him, what he's supposed to be a Canadian, educated in Canada, went to Japan, got in the war. He was walking around and hollering there, slapping the guys around with his sword. He was the main one.
Do you know his name?
No, I don't know what his name was. I couldn't recall his name. I know the guy was saying he was one of those who said when he soon as Japan wins the war, he's going to take over the sea and see if he really is going to be his. This never happened. And then we were in Japan in 80 when the war ended. We come back, we're asking, well, I said, as soon as the war ended, the guy got a hold of him. That was it. He hung him fast. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. I wasn't there. I believe it was January of 1943.
And what was the trip like to Japan?
Well, the trip was bad. We were in the hold of the ship. It was hot. There wasn't much air. It wasn't the best of trips. Guys were sick. And it was pretty tough. The worst part was that if it wouldn't have been even though in the hole, there would have been some air, but the ventilation was very poor. And we were crowded and just had to do, and that was it.
And how long were you in the hole?
Well, I don't know how many days it took us to get over there. Might have been a week, might have been 10 days. So we got there. I really don't know how long it took us to get there. I don't remember. And then we ended in Japan, landed in Japan. And we were taken to this coal mine. And we stayed there right through until the end of the war. It was bad. Some of the boys, we worked in the coal for a while, but before we worked in the coal, there were mines and they had to be, the shafts had to be cleaned out. They had two shafts. Well, one was open part ways, but it was just barely. So they had us working there, and then, I don't know, about 1,000 feet down, they had it was a sloping shaft. It wasn't up and down, just a sloping shaft. It flew up down.
Did you land, when you landed in Japan, you landed in Tokyo, did you?
No, we did not. We must have landed in Nagasaki.
Hey, what was your impression of when you first saw Japan?
Well, it was a nice city. What we saw. Because you got out of the boat, and from the boat you got on the train, and that was it. And you couldn't see very much.
Did you land in the daytime?
Oh, no, don't remember.
And you went up to this mine by train?
Yes.
And you happened to see any Japanese people happen to see you on the way?
Well, no, when we come there, we had seen very few people, actually, what the people were like. I don't know, we got there daytime, we come in, it was also sort of a, we had about 10-foot fence around it, and a building, two-story building in there. And that's where we were. There was Canadians, Grenadiers, the Royal Rifles, and there were some British.
Do you happen to know the name at all of the place in Japan? Do you know the name of the place?
I believe it was called Sekikonai.
Sekikonai?
Yeah.
And what would this date be? What time was this?
Well, it must have been sometime in January, beginning of February, or sometime the end of it.
And how many of you were there in this group?
There was 200, I believe, of us in there. That's all told when we got there.
And they're all mixed, not just your contingent?
No. Like I said, there was the Grenadiers, there was the Royal Rifles, and there was some British in there, in that place.
Did you ever know why they picked you in particular?
No, I don't know why I was picked or why anybody was picked. They just picked the guys up and all right. For the result, you're going, that's it. But the reason for it, I wouldn't know.
And working in this camp, was there any particular way military regime kept among the prisoners? Did you have your leaders among them in the barracks?
Well, we had our sergeants, as far as that goes, our own sergeants, but we all worked together. And then the Japanese camp was right, they had their guards already in the camp, officers in the camp. And they want anything, Well, most of the time, they'd walk up to one of the sergeants to... But ordinarily, it wasn't too bad. They even call me sergeant. He was a group leader, so every group had a leader, and they picked the guy out as a leader. Okay, you're the leader of that group, you're the leader of that group, and that's it. So he was responsible for his group of...
What about, were there any particular individuals that stood out at this time? Had they got into trouble with the Japanese, or just...
Well, we had one of the boys was taken away, but he was from the Royal Rifles of Canada. He was on a, not in the same shift as we were, he was in the second shift or three shift. And the boys claimed that well, he wasn't feeling well or something, he had spoke for the Japanese, and he was taken away from our camp. He never came back. That must have been in 44, I believe. About 44.
And you never knew what happened to?
No. As far as we know, he was taken to some other camp and he died there.
Do you know his name at all?
I don't remember his name.
In,
Yes, I would say they were. They weren't quite as mean. They were, well, we learned to talk now, but we talked to them. They have their spells. There was one sergeant who was a big man, usually there a while. He was thick. It was just so, and that's it. I know one day we had to go to work at night, so we had to suffer. And I don't know, I lay down in the room and I fell asleep. Didn't hear the bell go for evening count. So one of the boys come running out and he said, well, what the heck are you doing here? No, I went out. He was standing there. They called us up, we were there. So he walked up, he says, told me after parade, spoke good English, report to him. So after parade, I report to him, he asked me what the trouble was. I said, well, I had supper, I guess, waiting to go to work, I must have just fallen asleep. Well, he looked at me, shook his head and belted me one and told me not to happen again, that was all.
Is he the one they called the bird? Or?
No. Then later, we had a lot of Americans come in already, in there, and they had more guards come in. There was quite a few bad ones. There was one in particular who was very bad. This young fellow, I guess he was just throwing his weight around, but the spirit goes down the water, he didn't last long. In fact, already we weren't working, we knew that the war was over, but they were still in charge. He went to one of the camps and started to get a little bit tough than one of the Englishmen. He was a big fella, English MPs. He grabbed him, took his rifle away and carried him down to the officer. And told the officer to keep him because otherwise he's going to boot him. So he knew he'd see that guy again. He took him on the camp fast.
What about working in the mines themselves?
It was hard. It wasn't the safest place. There's quite a few cave-ins. Quite a few of the boys were killed in there. I know we worked in this one particular spot in this shaft. We had to clean it out to open up, because we had to open up where the tracks had to be going. It was caved in a long time ago. So we worked so far that we cemented the walls about 5 feet high. Some places wasn't too much cement, some places quite a bit, quite wide of cement. They hauled the cement and the gravel down, and they mixed it with the hand paddles. And we were cementing and it was dribbling a bit of dirt out the ceiling, so we told a Japanese leader, we told, called him a Buntai Joe. We told him it was bad. Well, he says, that's all right. So we went home that evening, and we come in the morning, and she had caved in right where we were working. So we went further down to work, and took them a couple of days, the Japanese themselves, they had their work in that cave and brace it up. And we kept right on going to work.
What were your tools like?
Oh, tools were all primitive. For mixing cement, well, they had very much like these, well, they call them paddles, little spades, so long, about so wide, you know. They had a steel plate for mixing, which I've seen before. And for loading dirt, they had a bamboo basket with a little they call it kakita, call it a little short-handled hole, a garden hole. And you fill it up in a basket, the dirt, and you throw it in a cart, in a steel cart to be taken up, and that's the way.
And how much would you have to get out in a day?
We have to do quite a bit, but also depends on the Japanese. If he was in a good mood, and things were pretty tough, so he explained to the man above him that what the trouble was, why we only got that much, and it was all right. But he wasn't in the right mood. We used to work 14, 15 hours. He just wouldn't budge. Had to get 30 or 40 cars, whatever he said, for a day. Oh, that was it. He didn't care whether you cried or whatever he did.
How were the men fed? Just two meals a day?
No, we were fed. No, we were fed three meals a day when we worked the mine. The rations were small. You get rice, a ration of rice. It was a little, I don't know, maybe 6 ounces. Then we'd get a piece of, it was a pickle, we called daikon, I guess it would be pickled radish. A little piece, about so long, thickness of your finger, maybe a teaspoon of pickled fish or something like that to go in it. Except one time, I remember we come in from the mine and they had brought in some whale blobber to camp. Now boy, that thing stunk to high heaven. The guys who were cooking and steaming it, they come in, they had towels around their mouths, so they just throw it in there and steam it and rinse it off and steam it. A lot of boys didn't eat it. I ate a couple of pieces. It wasn't bad for a change, you know. Said I enjoyed it, but it was something that was bad in rice and pickle, you know.
How was your health at this time?
It wasn't bad. Outside of sore feet, my health was pretty good. They also gave us once a day a little bottle, they call it a vitamin of some kind, whether it helped anything or not, I don't know. But the boys were doing pretty good.
What about your weight?
Oh, the weight wasn't bad. I was about maybe 140 pounds.
What was your normal weight at that time?
About 170, 75.
So you weren't that bad off?
No.
Were there any Koreans working in the mine?
Well, there might have been. But I couldn't tell you. They said, I know I've heard saying that some of them were Koreans, that they were working right down in the coal. But whether they're Koreans or Japanese, I don't know. They all look the same to me.
So it wasn't just prisoners working in the mine?
No, no, no. They also had Japanese working or Koreans. Now whether those Koreans were prisoners also, or whether they were civilians, or whether they were just forced labor, I couldn't tell you. But they also had women working down the mine. Women working on top, unloading the cars.
How many people do you think would be working in this mine hospital?
Well, I'll say, not counting the prisoners of war, there might have been 100, 150 inside and outside around the mine working.
And how many prisoners were in the camp?
Well, from the start, there were 200. And then after a while, I believe there must be close to 1,000 of us in there.
But they all weren't working in the mine?
No, no, no. Well, towards the last, we were working down the mine, and some were working in the mine, and other places, you know, and no, they were.
Do you have a hospital here at the camp?
No, there was. Right in the same barracks, there was a bit of a, they had a separate room for anybody got sick while they went in there. But if anybody got sick, like some of the boys had yellow jaundice, only thing they did was you went in there and you laid in there, that's all. There was no cure, no medicine, anything.
Did you ever get any Red Cross packages while you
were in prison? We did get the American Red Cross package when we were in Japan. what time it was, I don't know. We had also received parcels from the ladies' distillery. Because I know I got one, there was razor blades, the socks, the stuff like that. There's quite a few. Some of the boys got cigarettes from the ladies' distillery. Some got tobacco, and then other ways got cigarettes, to save this, the razor blades, and the razors, socks, and gloves, and stuff. Shirt, or undershirt, something, you know.
Did you find the stuff really helpful?
Yes. It was that. It was really helpful. Especially when we got, I know when I got my parcel, I guess I just won the lucky ones. And I got it. I know there was razor blades. Well, we put a share it. Everybody, there's quite a bit of them, everybody shared them, and they were really good, because we were just, well, the razor blades were really, no razor blades. And still, they expect us to keep be clean shaven and everything. Hair had to be cut, so if they come along, he couldn't grab it. And when he come along, he had a little guy, he was an orderly, called him Suji. You look at past, if he took a look, he said, you had a little short fella. He'd jump up and grab, he'd grab you by the hair. Just have to have a haircut.
What was your hygiene like? Did you get to clean, to wash much?
Yes, we had, we could have washed the clothes, and they had it was a sunken bathtub. We'd come out of the mine, and the first place we'd go was to the bath, hot water. It was a great big place, the size of this room. 4 feet deep, and then the bench you can sit on, so you could really wash yourself, hot water and everything.
And what about the latrines?
It wasn't flush things. The latrines were in the building too. You'd have to go outside. But they were holes dug in the ground, they were cemented up. And all that was saved, and every so often they'd get so many guys with buckets to carry it out to the gate, and they had a big sort of a cesspool dug. And that's where we dumped all the stuff. And then that was used for the gardens.
Were you ever in this group?
Oh yes, oh yes. So the big ladles, and you dip it out of there into a wooden bucket, so almost maybe 5 gallon wooden bucket. A rope, pour in between, guy one guy in the front, in the back, and the shoulder.
Any face masks?
No, they wouldn't believe in that, they didn't think it was that bad. And that stuff from that lagoon, they use that, people use it for the gardens. That's the only way they could do grow anything in there anyway. Because the ground is like red, and you couldn't dig the shell, you have to use a pick for picking it.
Did any of the prisoners ever have any gardens or anything?
No. Yeah. No, we had, where we were, you couldn't have, because the place was just enough room that he was in there, in between, like it was built. And inside there was a little empty space. Well, maybe 20 by 60, 20 by 80. Just if you want to walk in there, you know. Because everything in there was sliding doors, sliding windows. And you want to walk out there, so you walked out there. But there was nothing. You couldn't grow anything in the way there.
Were you ever able to barter with any of the people for food or anything?
No, we never had a chance to do that thing. Well, some of the boys might have done it down the mine, but I doubt very much because the people never had themselves. I know our Japanese leader we had, Ogio-san, he was good. Once in a while, he'd come around and he'd give us a cigarette. Or he had a little pipe, a little wee thing, so I never brought one. Tobacco was something like here, you know, and you could put a pinch in there. 2 puffs and it was gone. So you have another little thing ready, you know, and you bang that out, put that in, put it on top of the fire, and take a puff, you know. That's the smoke.
What was the food like for the guards?
It's the same.
No better?
Yeah, it was no better than ours. No. Because we used to have our dinner, used to sit down with us, we used to have the same little thing, just a little flat mass in about an inch by maybe 3 by 5 or 6 inches. They have a little bit of rice in there, a little piece of pickle, a little piece of fish, and that was just...
How was their health?
Well, they looked all right. They weren't well. There aren't any fat ones, they don't think of that.
When could you tell that the war was coming to an end?
Well, a few weeks before then, well, I'd say, yeah, sometimes now say a week, about a week before then, we had, they also had the Japanese, the guard, they had a woman cooking for them there, and there was a man there. And they had storeroom, they had brought in a whole bunch of rice in there. Not the polished rice, but the raw rice, from the purple color. And then one day there, they're all in there, the guards come in, and this Japanese, the cook, another few of them there, the guys, they were sort of long-faced looking around, and those were crying away and bawling away, so we knew that something was cooking, but what it was, and the guys got a little bit tougher, and then the planes, they started going over often. You could see the American planes, they were just plane after plane, so we knew that it wasn't Japanese planes to walk up.
How was the morale of the men at this time?
It picked up a bit, but like I say, we ourselves, some of the boys, they were given up hope that nothing would happen, then they picked up a little bit.
By the time you were in the prison camp, did you have any idea of how the war was going?
No. A wee bit, we had a Chinese with us. Well, his father was English one time, and his mother was Chinese, and he was pretty old himself. He was a Hong Kong Malaysian, he was with us. He could read a bit of Japanese. So we did get hold of the paper sometimes, someplace. Well, there wasn't very much to it. As far as he could read, the Japanese were making good progress all over. Even towards the last, they were still making progress, still winning. But we knew towards, I'll say, about a week, 10 days before then, then within the last week after that, there's planes and planes and planes and planes and planes. So we knew that was, that the end wasn't too far off. The Japanese, they weren't too happy about it. For a while the sirens blew, the air sirens, the one that they started blowing the sirens. They used to holler at everybody, get out of the way and hide inside the building and everything. And after a while, there wasn't too much hollering
about it. Did you ever have any escapes while you were
in prison warfare? No, outside of the one that happened in North Point. There were none others.
What was this escape North Point all about?
Well, that was from, I believe, headquarters company or what it was. We didn't know. All we know at night we woke up and called up because some guys escaped. To this day, how it was done, who done this place was before them. Nobody seems to know. Well, if somebody doesn't know, I never spoke about it. Nobody said anything. What happened to them, whether they were caught or whether they got away or what happened, I don't know.
There's no record, nobody thinks
so. I don't think anybody knows anything.
But is there any talk of escape when you were in
the camp? No, I never heard any. I never heard anything of it.
Do you ever realize, given reason why nobody ever saw escape?
Well, I myself looked at it, but actually escaping from there, there was no place to go. We weren't there long enough to get to know anybody to help you. Now, if you got in, we didn't know so that much difference between the Chinese and Japanese. And we wouldn't trust, I myself would not trust the Chinese because they turn you over for, somebody offered them 10 cents, they turn you in anyway, for the reward, because they were poor. They had absolutely no way of getting along, the Chinese themselves. There was millions of them. I've seen us walking down the street and they'd be lying there in the street and they'd have these British, would have the truck going through every so often, pick them up, throw them in the truck, and that's the story. They're all coming in from the war of Japan, from the mainland China, they're coming through the Hong Kong colony there and they just stayed. They had, so they would do anything for a dime. And then if you did escape, you had absolutely no place to go. So the Japanese were all around, there's water all around, no matter where you turn, you went to the mainland, the Japanese were there. Any island close by, the Japanese were there. There was no place to hide in there. There was no place to go.
How did you find the Japanese treating Chinese people when you were talking about?
Well, when we saw them, a lot of these guys, when we were captured, we were seen a lot in championship pool bags or some North Point. Now why they were older and some said big kids, they'd have their hands. I've seen one, well, no, they were older, but they didn't be too big. They see about 13, 14 year olds, about five of them. They had their hands tied behind their back with barbed wire and they were leading them off somewhere, and then they said they were, well, they were taking them out of their hands. We started with the fans were on the back of the back with barbed wire to see it hooked together and take them. That's where they were taking them, who knows, I guess that was the last of their work.
You ever see any brutalities at all?
I can't see that I saw it on the Chinese, what happened.
What about the Indian troops that were captured this year? Were they in the same?
They were in the same predicament, yes. We had the troops riding the sheets in the same camp, and they were in the same thing. The meal was served out of one kitchen. They all had to line up and eat the same thing. And I don't think they did any better than eating, even though they're supposed to be used to that diet. I don't think they're doing any better. Because you know, there's quite a few Indian troops who were there with dysentery, just as well as ours. But we were not used to that diet of rice and rice and rice. Like they had, they were more used to it than still didn't. Outside of the ones that I heard about, otherwise in Japan myself, I never heard of anyone educating in Canada. Those two that were supposed to have been in Hong Kong. This officer, well, how high an officer I was, I don't know. I know he walked around dressed better than some of the others. And then the one in North Point who said he was a corporal, he was also from Canada. How much is he said, I don't know. But this one was supposed to have been to university in BC, British Columbia University. He said he was going to take over the CNSC period, this would be his. He was the mean one. Then there was a corporal. He used to come around to the huts in North Point. He talked, he said, he come from Canada too, but went for a visit to at that time, forward China. You come there for this, well, you didn't understand what you were doing, but he was there. But he was half-assed, he stopped and talked.
One year was some of the American prisoners in Japan. How did the Japanese treat them?
Well, I'll say there was very little difference. All they had was more guards, but there was no difference. They didn't treat them any meaner.
Did you,
They weren't too long. When America started coming in, we weren't there really too long. That's up in America.
Did you ever have a chance to socialize with any Americans?
No, I'd say we didn't. Very little. Oh, we'd go in there for a while, talk with some of them. And then they'd come around and talk with us, but not too much, because we still were, they were too, and you'd come in. And there were a lot of times you put in 12 hours work. You had your bags of drinks you want to go lay down to.
So there's really no social life to yourself, time off?
No. Well, we have a Sunday off, but that's what.
And you mostly spend your time off just resting?
Yeah, most of the time you guys spent was just, you just lay down and sit down and relax and talk. You didn't, I didn't put in too much activity because after all everybody was doing the same thing, was saving up all the energy he could.
The day the war ended, what exactly happened in your camp?
Well, I don't think very much happened. And we still have the guards. Now, the day the war ended, must have been after the war ended, because kept them going the same. Until now I know there was a Red Cross delegation come in one time, but it was later. I know we know when America was putting the food drops down, we saw these American planes circling and circling one day and the second day. And we had already gone out on the roof, the guys went on the roof and painted a big POW in white on the roofs, on slate roofs, and it was white. So one of the boys, there was a mirror. No way, guy from one of the places. He got up on the roof and the plane was circling. He tried to get his attention to the mirror. And he must have, because the plane circled once more and he dropped a bunch of drums, mostly candy and gum and stuff like that. That's what it dropped. And after that, it dropped a couple of nights later. Because I believe they knew there was a camp, but they didn't know exactly where it was.
And how were they, were you working at this time?
Yes, I still worked pretty well right through till we found out it was over. Then we didn't work. Then for a while the Japanese were still there. Then there's only a few Japanese were left. And luckily, well, the troops took over themselves. The Americans, as soon as the news was over, they took off immediately. They could have gone down to one of the airports, they had Americans flew out. They had planes flying out every hour, taking all prisoners out, no matter how much. Every hour a plane left for Manila, or Guam, wherever it was flying, but they said, anybody want to go, all you have to do is you hitchhike a ride to that, to the airport, and it was gone, it was gone. There was quite a few of our boys left too.
How did you yourself get back to Canada?
Well, we didn't. We stayed there to the last. I did not leave the camp. Oh, we were out in town. We used to go around, walk around town. And then towards the last, well, the summer before that, everything was pretty scarce. We used to go out, sometimes go to work if you work nights, daytime, in the morning wake you up and get a bunch of guys to go out. Try and pick some grass or some roots, catch a few snakes.
Just wasn't any food at all?
No, food was very scarce. They did bring in, see them come in with a cart, horse bones. They actually were horse bones because hoofs were on them yet. Hardly any meat on them. They scrape it off and you throw that in the pot, you know, boil, so the rice had a bit of a better flavor. But the food was very, very scarce.
And what about the local villagers around the area? What were they doing this time?
Same thing. They were just as well. In fact, I might even say that maybe some of us were better off prisoners with the locals and the local people.
And what was their attitude towards you once the war was over?
Good. I don't think they held any. They were scared. Some of them were scared. But ordinarily, they were. I say they were good. And we went through. Seen a little place, went out to other places. And the Americans come in, I know Americans come in one time and took everybody's name and number down. I mean, there was of us. That must have been, you know, maybe a week after. They come in. They had a bus of their own. I don't know, there's officers, they had a camp. For, I don't know, maybe 20 miles or so. Get the bus to go home because I know we got in the bus, a bunch of us went up there to the American camp. Stayed there for a while. Then we came back. Bus brought us back to our camp. We waited till the last. Then we got the train, went down to Nagasaki. That's when I saw Nagasaki was bombed. Went through it. Well, there was no town then, and we were going through everything. Outside of big buildings used to be, well, I remember seeing them, big, must be big concrete buildings with the steel reinforced. Well, it was just a tangle of steel. You think that somebody grabbed some soft copper wire and squished this with his fingers and dropped it down.
Were there any people around?
Well, there was people around. Not too many, but there was people around in, around the docks.
Did you see any signs of people been in the bomb blast?
No. So the train went right to the docks. And as we got out the dock, we went right on the boat.
When you were in the prisoner camp, did you hear about this?
No.
You had no idea when you came?
We had no idea what this, that thing had happened. Well, after the Americans came along, they said they had the atomic bombs, but what they were like, we had no idea what it was until we seen the, going through Nagasaki, what really happened. Something bad, like I said, there was big buildings. Steel. You could just see the steel as if somebody went ahead and grabbed and squished a bunch of soft copper wire and made it to a bar and one dropped and that's all it was standing there. Everything else around was black. It was destroyed. But the boat, the train went right down to the docks. We got off the docks and straight to the boat.
Did you have a name of the boat? What kind of a ship was it?
I believe it was an aircraft carrier.
It was a military ship you were on?
Yep. And we got down to Okinawa. And Okinawa we got transferred to an American troop ship. And down to Manila.
And how many of you were there at this time in the group?
There wasn't too many of us left. But maybe there was 100.
All Canadians?
Pretty well all Canadians, yeah. Some, a few British. There were no Americans, all Americans had pulled out as soon as it was over, as soon as they got a chance, they pulled out immediately.
How were most of the British going on? To Canada? Or?
They came to Canada. They came to Canada from Canada, just used to come.
So this boat, we straight from Manila, where did it go?
And then from Manila, we got on a British aircraft carrier, the Gloria, the new boat. I don't think she's seen any action yet because she wasn't quickly completed. We come down to Hawaii. We did have a bit of a row on the boat, not much, but he wants us to work. Clean up and sweep up and all that, and we didn't want to do it. There was one, suppose he was a Canadian, he was supposed to be a pilot in Singapore or someplace. He was coming back to. And one of the sergeant majors went to the one of the officers in the boat and told him not to bother because as soon as we got to Hawaii, there was some newspaper reporter come up and he asked us all to get off and he was going to fly us into the States. We didn't like the trip, so he told us, well, he said, just get out the boat. He said, don't worry, we'll stop. He said, you want me to say, just come along with me. And he says, we'll get the bus in here and take you all out to the airport. See, before you know it, you'll be, before the boat leaves here, he says, you'll be in the States already.
What was your clothing like at this time? Did you issue new clothing?
Oh, yeah, we had been issued new clothing in Manila. We had also been issued clothing in Japan.
What kind of clothing was it?
They're just cocky American.
You look more like Americans than you can.
That's right, that's right.
And what did you use for identification then? Oh, that's true.
Didn't have anything.
And you just told them who you
just
were?
Just told you who you were, that's all. We still had nothing. And from Manila, we went down to Hawaii. And from Hawaii, we went to Victoria, Lake Victoria. Buses were waiting, took us down to boarding and back.
The plane flew from Hawaii to Manila?
No, we went by boat. We didn't get off.
No.
We stayed right in the boat. Come right out to Victoria, Victoria to go in and pass.
This was this aircraft carrier?
Gloria. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the British aircraft carrier.
And were there other troops on the ship?
Well, there wasn't too many. Like I said, there was maybe 100 or so of us. There was Canadians and British. So we all got off to go in and pass.
And what about the crew on the ship? Were they kind of green individuals or were they seasoned?
No, they were pretty well seasoned. One of the things is that they were, I think they were a bit short-handed. Mm-hmm. That's what they were, partly short-handed. They're coming out of Australia as far as I know. They're short-handed.
You mean they were mostly Aussies? Mostly Aussies on this boat?
No, English, British. But I think there was British and they were pulling out of us from Australia and they were a bit short-handed. Either they didn't have enough on or something, but expect to get Australians on there, which they didn't. And that's why they were short-handed.
And so how long did you spend, where were you stationed in Victoria?
In Gordon Head Barracks. That's an island.
And how long did you spend there?
Spent there about 4 days. We had a medical, x-rays, Some left after 2 days, others had to stay because the x-ray didn't turn out. We had to x-ray him again. We spent there, I stayed there 4 days.
And how was your medical turn out?
Well, it said it turned out pretty good, but I don't know. He let me go home and give us some pills. Powdered milk, pills. Had a couple jars, almost 4 jars, different kind of pills. Take 3 of each every day. and I come all the way back home to McAllister, Saskatchewan.
Did they give you any money at all?
We received $200 American when we got to Manila.
So this is what you used to get you back home?
Well, that was just money. We didn't have to use that thing because we didn't actually get home without any money as far as that goes.
You got free train?
Yeah, because we got on we come on the boat, okay, we come there, and we left Gordon, had bags, the bus took us to the station. We had the tickets before leaving Camby. We were going, they said you could go out, they called into the office to give you your ticket, your meal ticket, everything. So you didn't have no, there's money with you, so that's sure, maybe you want to buy a book or something, that's what I'm asking for. You got down without any expense.
So where'd you get off the train when you got past Saskatchewan?
Right in Nicaragua. Right in Nicaragua, got off. Stayed home for about 4 weeks. 4 days.
Was anybody there to greet you the train?
Yes. Parents were there, brothers, sisters.
They knew you were coming?
Yes, they knew I was coming, they didn't know when. They knew that we had planned to be in Vancouver, but when we were coming, we didn't know.
Were there any other boys from your hometown who were in the Hong Kong group?
No.
This year?
In Kenora, there was one in Kenora. He's dead now. But like some others 7-8 miles away.
Yeah, were there any other, did you have any brothers in your family who fought other places?
I had my brother in the Navy. Younger brother, he's in Edmonton now. He was in the Navy.
And so did your, how did people in your hometown accept you? Were they?
Oh, well, I'd say they were glad to see that I come back anyway. Somebody was back.
Did your parents know, or your family know that you were a prisoner in Hong Kong during this time?
Yes, they knew. We had written a couple letters from I think from Hong Kong, we wrote one from Japan, actually going for letters to the card. And all you could say, well, fine. Doing well. That's what, there's nothing you couldn't say, you couldn't say so much on it. But we had written.
Did you ever receive any letters?
Yes, I think I received one too. But there wasn't very much in it. We are fine, we are well, let's put that. So.
Yeah, pretty well.